sinker and line.
Well, I gotta tell you, the only way I'd be going fishing right now is if I was able to turn into a duck. Because it's windy, it's rainy, it's blowing. I mean, they got tornado warnings up, for God's sake. So, if you're actually out there fishing right now, you got my admiration and respect. Because you are one tough cookie. You got no chocolate chips in there. It's pure all, you know, dough and nuts right there. Because this is big time. And there is freshwater fishing to be had, saltwater fishing to be had. There's all kinds of stuff. And this weather is, you know, how weird for December. Fish and Frank in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ in the control center making all this possible and almost forgivable. And I got to tell you, I think sheephead right now is one of our bigger stories. You could be out sheephead fishing today if you were really hardcore. I mean, talk about sandpaper between the teeth there. Yeah, I wasn't going anywhere else.
I get it.
It was because, man, it's tough out there. We drove up from Port Charlotte. We live here in Northport, Florida. And, man, some of the wind and some of the gust.
Pretty sporty out there.
Pretty sporty. But sheephead, there's so many places you can go out. Robert, give me a couple places for sheephead.
To go fishing today, honestly, I would say...
How about the Venice jetties?
Yeah.
I mean, it's only got to be, what, 6 to 8 foot waves crashing on the jetties right now?
I'll bet you that there's a couple guys on surfboards out there right now, though.
Oh, yeah. If I was still in my 20s and 30s, I'd have my windboard out. I'd be blasting across the harbor.
Yeah. The National Weather Service said 16 footers offshore.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, some big water out there right now.
Because we used to pray for the tropical storms. We used to windsurf all the tropical storms, the afternoon thunderstorms. I mean, you got to be a special kind of stupid to wait for the thunderstorms to go out and go windsurfing. Yeah. Big old mast sticking up there.
Yeah, it's a little goofy.
What's that?
A little goofy.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what happens when you've been hit by lightning a couple of times. You just don't quite, you know.
Right.
It was fun, though. Anyway, so we're... Outside of the Venice jetties?
Outside of the Venice jetties, honestly, I would say like the Tom Adams bridge underneath it, or even the Anger Pier right next to it, might be a little out of the teeth. It's still going to be windy no matter where you go, but I mean, with the amount of fish that they've been catching, even if you want to wait another day for this weather to pass by, that would be where I would be going.
So how about Placida?
Unbelievable also. That would be the second best bet.
All right. And that's unbelievable, but that's my second best bet?
Yep, just because it's a little more protected over there at the Tom Adams.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to figure out why it's unbelievable, but it's my second choice.
At the angle of Placida versus the Tom Adams, it's a little bit facing more into the teeth of things.
And the intercoastal is much narrower there.
Yes.
In Englewood, you have a much smaller body of water to work with, so you can't get quite as bad.
Right.
Eljabeen's
been pretty good, but it's been inconsistent. That's the problem with it for me personally, is that one day's been really good, the next day has been pretty lousy to okay for sheep's head. The ones that they are catching, though, are better quality sheep's head.
Is it possible to fish from that swing bridge up north of the Tom Adams Bridge? Is there a place to park there?
What's the name of it? Starts with an A. Up there in Venice, you're talking about.
Well, on the way up, because you've got the Beach Road, Tom Adams Bridge, and then the next one north is a swing bridge up there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I honestly haven't ever fished there.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. It's got to be good, but I don't know.
Albee Road is the one I'm thinking of.
You can actually park there to fish.
Yeah, I don't know. At Albee Road you can, but I don't know what the name of that other one is right there at Minnesota.
Yeah, it's before you get into Venice.
You know what it is?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Yeah, none of us know. I mean, I know.
I don't know where I am right now, never mind what it's called.
Right?
I'm writing an article for the Waterlife magazine, and the basis of the article is try not to overlook where you are on your way to where you're going. you know, because that's a big thing. You know, we always want to get where we're going, but we forget that, oh, wow, look right here.
Well, like you said last week, you buy this great boat with an expensive motor, and you don't want to just putt out 100 yards. You want to get out there and go.
Right.
You know, let's see what this baby can do.
The west side,
is where all the fish are, right?
But if you live on the west side, the east side is where all the fish are.
Exactly right.
Anyway, this front is going to, if you ever, you know, when you're fishing, and one of the things everybody always talks about is right before a front, how the fishing gets really, really good. And the fish are biting like crazy. Now, half time is really dangerous to be out there because you're literally fishing right before the front hits. And when that front hits, it's wind and rain and all that kind of stuff. But the fish feed like crazy right before one of these front hits.
Right.
Right before that low pressure comes up. And once that front hits, it could be hours or days before they hit again. You're literally catching every fish you ever dreamed of, and you can see the front go over the top of your head, and boom, it shuts off.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely like a light switch. Everything
you've seen
shuts
that
down.
All over, haven't you?
Yeah, well, that's all over the world you see that with fish. I'm not sure what happens to the fish. Are they detecting the low pressure?
I have
a hypothesis
about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and actually, I like your theory on this.
Well, fish have a swim bladder.
Yes.
Little tiny swim bladder. And when they squeeze it, they sink down in the water a little bit. When they expand it, they raise up in the water. And we're talking micro changes in that. Now, air pressure is basically 14 pounds per square inch, right? And what got me thinking about it was you get a front going across and you're out grouper fishing. It really doesn't change much. The fish are still biting. They don't seem to be affected by the front the way the fish would, say, up on the flats or in the harbor. And so the shallower the water is, the more the fish are affected by these cold fronts that come through, these low-pressure fronts. And so what I'm thinking is when you go down 30 feet, it's another atmosphere. When you go down 30 feet underwater, it's now 28 pounds per square inch. So that atmospheric pressure doesn't have as much effect. When the atmospheric pressure is 14 pounds per square inch and it pushes on the surface of the water, that creates the water pressure, especially in shallow water. And so as a front comes through, that pressure drops. It relieves the pressure from the water, changing the water pressure, making the swim bladder of a fish expand a little bit more because there's not as much water pressure. All of a sudden, that same pressure the fish used to stay in place, now he's floating towards the surface. So as the air pressure affects the water pressure in shallow water, the more it affects the swim bladder of a fish. Kind of like when you come down, you're at 30,000 feet in an airplane and they do a real quick drop landing, your ears are popping, your sinuses are going crazy, your eyes feel all weird, you know what I mean? People are more likely to eat before they get on a plane than after they get off kind of a bad flight. You know, you get off that flight, you know, you don't feel good, your sinuses, your ears are all weird, you're, you know, holding your nose and blowing, trying to clear out the pressure. That's probably what the fish go through. All of a sudden, their swim bladder is a little bit bigger. They have a hard time staying in place. They have a hard time staying upright. Largemouth bass will go wedge themselves in the weeds to be able to stay upright and be able to control their body, getting in that heavy cover or dropping down as deep as possible in a lake. Where the saltwater fish, we find the same thing. They don't want to eat after a front. And I think it's because air pressure affects water pressure. But as you get out to 30 feet of water, that's a whole nother atmosphere. You get out to, you know, 60 feet of water, add another atmosphere. Water pressure becomes more and more there. So it's less likely any air pressure would affect the swim bladders of the fish.
And I can tell you, when you look at your depth pressure gauge, when you're diving and you do a deep dive, you're coming back up to decompress, and there's a couple of places where you can dive with a, you know, like one of the blue holes in the Bahamas and places like that, where they've actually put ropes down with markers on them. and you're expecting a certain depth pressure, and then you dive it the next day and you come back up to that spot and the depth pressure is different, and that might, and that usually is because a storm is coming through, you know, the atmospheric pressure has dropped. So that's true. And you're right, the deeper you get, the less effect that that has.
So theoretically,
so the deep water fish have no idea what's going on. The shallow water fish are being affected. And, you know, it's like anything else. If you're not feeling good, you don't feel like eating.
Exactly.
You have a little bit of a headache, you'll skip lunch, you know.
What do you think, Robert?
No, I like the theory a lot, without a doubt. And, you know, and a good way to kind of get an idea on what that does is you could simply put some water in a pan and then put your hand on it a little bit. Just lightly touch the top of the pan with your hand, and you can watch it raise up just a little bit. And that would give you an idea of the dropping pressure pushing down on the water. And it can't go anywhere. Once it hits the bottom, then it has to expand to the sides. But that downward force is still going down until it hits the bottom of the sand. And in shallow water, that's why you're going to have such a greater effect on your fish.
So if you put your hand lightly on the top, kind of push down in a pan of water, you'll start seeing a little displacement. You can feel that the water actually get a little harder. As you would quickly lift your hand off, that would be like a storm front going across, releasing that pressure off of there.
Right.
Affecting the swim bladder of the fish, making it hard for them to stay upright, stay in their position in the water. Everything about it would change.
Yeah.
So the more drastic a front happens, the more drastic the change to the fish's swim bladder.
Absolutely. And that's why they'll go into those major feeds sometimes for several hours before a front, or sometimes only for a few minutes before that front, and then shut down. You know, and sometimes that's why they take a full day to even several days to get acclimated again to where they feed normally again, or only a couple hours, because an afternoon thunderstorm that we have here in Florida in the summertime has a great deal of pressure in it. I mean, I've been out there and only within a mile of a thunderstorm and have my ears pop because of the pressure. Well,
the pressure
it's
changes, yeah.
But it's so quick, minimal effect. But when you have a frontal system like this, major effect.
And the fish would start to feed a lot before the front, knowing that once that they can start feeling that something's going to change, so they eat a lot, knowing they may not be able to eat or effectively chase their prey. They might not be, just because they couldn't stay upright in the water, they don't have good control over themselves, so they know they have to eat a bunch just to maybe get through that.
Absolutely.
So, all right, well, anyway, that's my hypothesis. That's the way I think. You know, it's scary inside of here. You guys get to see the outside. Don't ever want to see the inside of this. All right, trout.
We're
going to make a call. How do I find the phone
just
number?
Just hit Carl.
Okay. Call. All right. Call. We're just going to try and use the speakers here. Where's the speaker on this one? Got it. Can you hear it on there?
Yeah.
Hey, Carl.
Hey.
Can you hear that, RJ? You getting him? You're on Radio Fishin' Frank's The Fishing Show here at KDW Radio, Northport, Florida. Are you excited?
Oh, I'm thrilled.
Okay. what's been going on the water?
We've been having a lot of winds lately. So, I mean, that's been really limiting what you can do. But, like, if the winds are down...
I'm really glad we called Captain Obvious. You know, it was nice. I thought we were going to get Carl, but having Captain Obvious on the phone is always a good thing.
But, you know, if the winds are down a little bit, they're coming out of the east, the triple tail are still going phenomenal right now. Throwing shrimp at them. Yesterday we were actually throwing a fly rod at them, and I was actually surprised how well the fly rod worked on those triple tail. Everyone we threw at, he came off at 100 miles an hour for that fly.
Wow.
Another thing that's been going very well right now is the sheephead bite. Sheephead bite has been absolutely on fire.
What are you using for bait on the sheephead? Or you got a lure that's actually working? I think it almost has to be bait.
Yeah, I mean, I'm using a shrimp. I'm not using the whole shrimp, because, like, I tend to notice that if you're using the whole shrimp, they're going to grab the porcupine and the hook, and when you go to set the hook, when they're nibbling, they're just pulling it off, and then it's all you see buffet for them. So, like, yesterday, I told my guys, I was like, listen, I was like, when you feel those little nibbles, don't do nothing, because I'm only using a very small piece of shrimp on the hook when I jig it. When you feel that line start tightening up or pulling, that's when you set the hook, and most of the time you're going to get them that way. But if you're setting the hook or trying to reel down the fish when you're just feeling those nibbles, you're not going to get too many that way. They're pretty good at what they do, getting that bait off the hook.
No. Yeah, we used to say set the hook before you leave the house.
But I've actually been noticing that using a small piece of the shrimp, just pretty much covering the hook, the barb of the hook,
so
like a half-inch piece of shrimp, and then waiting for them to pull the line, that's when we've been getting a lot of good hookups on.
Now, you use the Rockport Rattler jig head a lot. Are you using the smaller shank hook or are you using a larger shank hook? Because those come in different size hooks.
I'm using a one-aught, either eighth ounce or quarter, depending on the current where I'm at. Sometimes I am adding a split shot on right above the jig head just to give it a little bit more weight to sit on the bottom.
Okay, because you're fishing some of the docks and some deeper water with faster moving water, but if you're up in the mangroves, you're just lightening up the weight a little bit.
Yeah, if I'm in the mangroves, I'm just using a regular jig head at 16th ounce or 8th ounce. But if I'm fishing the docks where there's some current, like when I'm like the passes, where there's a lot of sheep set at right now, I'm using a split shot with like a quarter ounce jig head.
You don't really
want to go too much weight because you're never going to feel those sheep set biting if you go too much weight.
So they actually have to be able to lift it up and haul off with it.
Yep, that's how I'm doing it right now. I'm letting them pick it up and start moving with it, and then that's when we know that they have it.
All right. So what else is going on besides, let's say, have you fished any of the canals lately?
The canals are doing very good up in PGI and Port Charlotte canals. There's a lot of big black drum running the Punta Gorda canals. The other day I went in there looking for them, and I thought I found them on the side skin. They're fishing, couldn't get them to eat. And all of a sudden, my guy hooks a 15-pound jack on the bottom with a chunk of half a crab. So there also is some very, very large jacks on the PGI canal.
I don't think I've ever caught a jack on a crab.
Huh?
I don't think I've ever caught a jack using crab for bait.
I live videoed it, and you could even hear me saying in the video that Jack ate a crab off the bottom of half of it. I said, that's never happened before.
No, that's pretty out of the ordinary.
But then, you know, I was like, okay, so they're all jacks. And the water temp, I think that day was 65 degrees. So I put lures on, and we were throwing lures, and nothing was happening. And I was like, all right, maybe it was just a fluke jack there, and they're all drunk. But I put shrimp on this time on jig head. And my guy was just bouncing it really slow off the bottom, and that was the key to catching all those big jacks. They were all sitting on the bottom feeding.
Well, it could be that cooler weather. Jacks are notoriously tropical around here, and maybe they're just hugging the bottom, a little more warmth, and don't really want to get that active.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as we put our baits on the bottom, we started hooking those big jacks one after another after another. Anything up in a water column like they would normally feed on, we would not get a hit.
That's really out of the ordinary. I mean, I've not heard of them feeding on the bottom like that personally.
No, it's something new for me, and I like that. I don't actually get to hear a lot of new stuff very often, but that's very intriguing. I'm going to have to put some thought into that, try and get that figured out without jumping to, okay, this would be why, because I don't know that the obvious explanation would be the correct one.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. I thought it might have been the water temperature or something, or maybe the pressure, but I'm not 100% sure. It blew my mind.
All right. You said you were chasing black drum. Did you find any?
Not yesterday. We didn't get on them yesterday, but the past few days we did. You know, there's some big drum running the canals, some 30 to 50 pounds right now. I've been doing best with a half a boot walker on the bottom. Once you find them using your side scan, it makes it easy to turn on them like that. The Port Charlotte canal is what I've been doing very, very well with snook fishing.
What are you using for bait on the snook over there?
We're using artificials. I'm throwing the Strike King Battle Tail still. We're also throwing big topwaters. We're using some those homemade wood lures.
Oh, the burrs lures?
With the props on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're about 6-7 inch prop baits. And we're doing very well on the Port Charlotte canal with the bait.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have to try one of those Williamson off-water. Those offshore topwaters we've got back there, it's some of those big ones, to see how that would work on the snook. Because we've got them 6, 8 inches, 10, 12 inches. I wonder if those big amberjack lures would work on those snook.
The way that they've been feeding in the Port Charlotte canals, I put money on it that they would.
Yeah, just stiffen up the rod tip a little bit, go up to like a 12 to 20 class rod so they would handle that size lure, and that might also be pretty awesome.
Yep. One thing that I've been finding lately, though, that is pretty odd, too, is I'm doing better on the trout fishing, not using shrimp. I'm using more like big fish pattern lures. Like the Strike King paddle tails, little DOA paddle tails. I'm doing better on the trout fishing on stuff like that over shrimp under a float.
Yeah, any thoughts on that, Robert?
You're catching bigger quality fish, or you're catching better numbers of them?
We're catching, good quality. I mean, they're all 16 inches and up.
I would say that the main reason for that is because those bigger fish like to eat fish more than they do the shrimp. So I think that's probably part of it. Are you drifting, or are you anchoring up in one particular spot?
Well, I mean, right there, the backside of Cayo Palau, as you're going into Bull Bay, you know, that area is covered up with good shot right now. What I've been doing is I've just been floating, using my trolling motor or the wind to push me through the area. Once we start catching one or two, I anchor the boat up right away, and then, you know, we sit there and keep catching them. Once it slows down, then I'll start floating again until we start getting into them again. So that area is covered up with a pretty good shot right there.
That's pretty good. That's impressive.
Yeah, it's the difference between the DOA and, say, the Strike King Rage Minnow and or like the Mirror Lure Marsh Minnow is... The DOA has a smaller body, smaller tail. You get, it's a whole different sound. When I'm using that Strike King or the Mirror Lure, I can put a very light jig head on it, pull it really, really slow, and because the tails are so bigger, so much bigger and so much floppier, I can actually get a lot of action, a lot of movement while just barely moving the lure along. Where with the DOA being such a smaller bait, I have to go a little faster to get some action out of it. I can slow down a lot more with the Rage Minnow or the Marsh Minnow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've been noticing. You're able to keep the bait and the strike for longer.
Okay. So what's your... if somebody... Now, I'm assuming today is like the end of the rain. It's supposed to stop sometime today. What's your best bet for somebody going out this weekend?
If you're going out for tomorrow or Saturday, I'd probably stay in the canal system. The wind's supposed to be still a little strong. Saturday, it's going to lay down a little bit, and Sunday, it's supposed to be beautiful out there. Sunday, to be honest with you, I'm going to go out for triple tail on Sunday, and then we're going for some of those big sandbar sharks that are running around the beaches right now. But, you know, the fishing is great. I'm going to make sure you have some live shrimp with you. Have a couple, size jig heads with you just in case, you're fishing in a strong current or not strong current. To be honest with you, the intercoastal area is doing very, very well. There's a lot of activity. hearing on the intercoastal is about the Grand right now. That's where I'd probably fish around that area just to get the most activity.
All right. So, jig head, shrimp, if you're going to go for sheep head, tear the shrimp in half, thread them on the hook, don't stick them on the hook, and that should probably bring them in good, huh?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, this has been Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters. You want to tell him your phone number, Carl?
941-565-7325.
565-7325, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, we'll let you go back. You're not out on the water, are you?
No, I'm actually sitting here looking at the boat right now in the rain and wishing I was out there, but I'm not going out there today.
Yeah, not even Carl will go out today?
No, if I did, I'd stay in the town system.
All right.
I put in, the farthest my boat would go is the boat ramp, and then you go into the canal.
Okay, Carl. Well, thanks much. Robert, any last questions for Carl?
Not at all. He covered it pretty well.
RJ, anything for Carl? All right. Well, Carl, thank you much. We'll talk at you later.
Yes, sir. You guys have a good one.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. That was Captain Carl, KB Backcountry. He's been getting on the water a lot. He's getting booked up pretty good. With all this rough weather, what's going to happen to the beaches? I mean, I built the back part of our new seminar area out of a couple of pop-up tents just as sunshade. I'm fully expecting to go back to the store and find them ripped to shreds, collapsed from the water, tore up. Who would have ever guessed that we'd be getting basically a tropical storm in December? And that's what this is like. This is more like a tropical storm than anything else.
And the long-range forecast for the next 8 weeks is we may see another one, if not two more, of these come through. So it's not over with yet. And as far as we know on the beaches, there is a beach erosion warning out, you know, for people that have properties and docks and stuff close to the beaches, that there is some erosion going on based on the wind direction and the speed.
Yeah, they're expecting 4 to 6 footers potentially breaking on some of the beaches.
That's right, yeah. National Weather Service gave us an alert this morning that had that in it.
Well, I think, you know, the one good thing that comes out of that is that a lot of times the day after that storm comes through, once the wind lays down a little bit, because going out there and getting your skin exfoliated by the sand blasting across you is not fun. But with that residual wave action, makes the water very cloudy, but it brings in a lot of your predatory fish because it disturbs that sand so much. It stirs up the little worms, the shrimp, the crabs, the coquinas. All that stuff gets just totally blasted all over the place, so it provides a major food source for your predatory fish like your pompano, your whiting, flounder, and sheep's head. All those will start cruising right along that surf line.
Yeah, some of the best surf fishing I've done was after a storm like this, and there's a lot of whiting, and the bigger ones come in, and certainly you start catching flounder when that happens.
Absolutely.
And you can see it in the water. You can see everything is stirred up, and you see all kinds of little critters floating around, and that's what brings the bait fish in, and then the bait comes in, and then the bigger guys come in after them. So, yeah, I think the best time to walk the beach and fish is right after a storm.
You know what else I really like about that? It's the best time to go looking for bones and teeth.
Yes, yeah, because it's all like stirred up, right?
Yeah, you go out and kind of do your little shark's teeth hunting while you're fishing along the beach, watching right along that surf line, because it disturbs not just the food sources, but it exposes a lot of little shark's teeth and other really cool fossils. So even if you're not into fishing right now, we got a lot of guests down here because it is Christmas time and going into New Year's, so there's people that are going to be down here for the next several days and be bummed that they really can't go to the beach, but this is actually prime time to go to the beach for A, the fishing, or B, the shark's teeth hunting, because a lot of people love to find that kind
of
stuff.
Right, and I think you see a lot of interesting shells come in at that point.
Yeah,
they get
absolutely
pushed in from deeper water. It's stuff you don't normally see on the beach.
And you'll even get to see a few live critters that you can put back into the water, like sand dollars or starfish,
yeah,
stuff like that. That can be really pretty cool, too. So for beach combing, it's awesome. I really enjoy this type of weather. feel bad for anyone that lives on those beaches that are losing part of that habitat, but for the rest of it, I dig it.
All right, so is this actually going to make, let's say tomorrow if the wind backs off a little bit, or you're going to wait till like Saturday?
If the wind backs off, I'm getting out there as soon as possible.
Yeah, you want to be there as soon as the rain quits and the wind backs down, so you know you're not getting knocked over by the rogue wave.
Yeah, I don't want to get my eyeballs blasted with sand more than anything else. But you also have to be aware, definitely, like your rogue wave that you're talking about, these storms can bring in some crazy rip tides. So you really, really need to be paying attention, walking along that surf line, watching where those waves are coming up to, be conscious of your footing and everything else, because you don't want to wade out in that. You don't want to try to chase after a sand dollar that's rolling down when the outgoing wave as a four-footer's crashing over top of you, because potential for some problems can be pretty quick and bad. You know, so that's what I would be mainly cautious of.
Right, and it doesn't take much of a wave to knock you over.
No, no.
In the surf, you know, a three-footer coming in that catches you just above the knees is enough to knock you down.
Absolutely.
All right. So, speaking of rogue waves, rogue redfish.
Yeah.
There is a couple of schools, one for sure, but we think there's more than one. Big, oversized redfish. We have a couple of guys who are out, and they say they caught 50-some redfish in a half, three-quarter day trip. Every one of them over what would normally be the slot limit. And is this, I guess it's still time for that. This is October, November. Now, we're just into the beginning of December, but the water this cool, they might not have left. And there's been no rain, you know, freshwater runoff down the river to run them out. So they could just still be hanging out from the big spawn.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But the particular area where they've been getting the most reports of the larger redfish is not a typical area where people are going to look for redfish. So I think that they're there every year this time of year for a little period of time. Either they're coming through while going from one area to another, because they are a pelagic fish at that size, but they still move inshore maybe to get into some different food sources or to check out temperatures, see how things are going as they're migrating to another area. But the area where they're mostly catching them has been the intercoastal, mostly right in the passes or next to the passes. You know, fishing both some of those deeper water docks and some of the deeper edges of those channels of those passes. And I think because they're not so heavily fished for those larger fish, they're not, you know, the people who get broke off by a big fish when they're drifting, say, Boca Grande Pass, they either tap it off as that was a rogue shark, or it was a little Jewfish, Goliath grouper, whatever you want to call it. You know, they rattle it off as to some other species that's normal train of thought versus saying, hey, that might have been one of those big bull reds that actually hit me and broke me off.
So, far as I know, they were just using shrimp for bait.
Yeah, they were using shrimp for bait. And the water's been clear enough out there in the intercoastal, they were actually sight fishing half of those fish. They were actually seeing them rooting around under some of those docks and some of those deeper cuts over there.
Now, when Robert's talking about the intercoastal, he's talking about Gasparilla Sound and Pine Island Sound. And not so much where the boats are running in the ICW, but along the shorelines on the back of Gasparilla Island, the back of Captiva, Cayo Costa, Palm Island, places like that. We're not so much technically in the intercoastal waterway, ICW, but more against the shoreline on the back of these islands. There's a lot of those, a lot of the islands, a lot of people have put a lot of money into big docks, and those docks, and then they pull the boats up, they're putting the motor in forward and reverse. Excuse me. Kind of blowing holes there.
Absolutely.
And what happens is, as they put the motor in reverse, kind of blows the sand out, you get these holes started, becomes 1 foot to 3 foot deeper than the other water, And that's what you're looking for underneath these docks, is not so much the ones where the sand's real even, but the ones where they have holes blown out by the outboards or the inboards, especially if you see docks that have big inboard boats tied to them, like cruiser boats or something. As they go in and out of gear, they're really blowing big, big holes in the bottom, and that's where those fish want to lay into.
Yeah, you've created created a structure / ambush point, because shallow to deep gives them a place to hide, both to get prey, but also to get out of the water current, because it's going to cause that water current to flow differently over and around those deeper potholes or blown out holes. But the other thing it also does is changes the water temperature, even a half a degree. You know, if they got a little spot where they can drop down into, that half a degree can make a huge difference of them being comfortable or not comfortable, and also wanting to feed.
Rig me up for big redfish in the canals. How should I be going for a big redfish?
Most of those guys are using, you know, a jig head and a shrimp, or a split shot and a shrimp. Along the intercoastal and those docks, in most of those spots, you don't have a great deal of current because you're right up pretty close to the shoreline. So getting that bait to slowly fall down into the water column has made it with a much more natural presentation. So, I mean, I'm going to fish it like I would any dock up in the Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte, you know, Gulf Cove, Myakka River areas. I'm going to use, you know, say 30-pound fluorocarbon leader with probably maybe an eighth or a quarter-ounce jig head, or most of the time my preferred way is just a split shot and a hook. But I am going to use a little bit bigger shrimp because of what I'm trying to target. You know, I'm looking for those bigger redfish, possible snook as bycatch, or even a larger flounder, which is very notorious bycatch along the intercoastal under those docks. I'm going to use a shrimp that's roughly about 3.5 inches long, you know, about the width of my palm of my hand, because that allows me to cast that shrimp a little bit easier, whether there's a little bit of a breeze or because my sinker might be just a little too light for casting it. But that shrimp's also big enough where he can fight that lighter weight that I'm using and give him a little bit more of a natural swimming pattern to him, to hopefully entice those fish to get a little bit more aggressive and feed.
So am I going to cast under the dock, or am I going to get upstream and let it work its way down?
That's usually how I do it, because I'm a terrible caster going underneath docks. I tend to cast onto the docks, and I'm really, really very overly cautious around people's docks and boats, because I don't want to be one of those guys that's smacking the gel coat off of a boat or leaving a hook and leader on somebody's dock where they could hook themselves by accident, or a child or a pet. You know, so I'm always careful of that. So usually for me, I like to cast just up current a little bit and try to let that bait drag down underneath it. You know, but I am definitely very cautious about it, because I just, like I said, terrible caster.
Well, and that brings up a good point about etiquette fishing around other people's docks.
Yeah.
Don't be bouncing your sinker or your jig head off the side of somebody's boat. And if you do happen to hook up on the dock, you need to find a way to get it off.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Don't just snap the line off and drift away, because you're right, a pet. And the other thing that happens is pelicans and other seabirds, that's another way they get hooked up, because there's usually a little something left on that hook.
Absolutely.
And now it's sitting on the dock and they can see it, and you're going to take a pelican down because you didn't do proper etiquette.
Absolutely. And it's sometimes hard to explain to a homeowner as you're pulling up to their dock trying to untangle something. But usually once you explain it to them that, hey, I accidentally hooked your dock and I'm just trying to get my hook off so I don't leave it behind, everyone that I've ever run into, I have never had one be totally belligerent and upset with me once they realized what I was doing.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I think that's by far the best way to do it.
It's worth that minor confrontation with the dock owner. You know, and like I say, you explain to them what you're doing. But it's worth that little bit of a confrontation just to get the hook and the piece of bait off so somebody doesn't get hurt with it.
Absolutely. What do you think's the best way?
Never leave a hook in somebody's rope. No. I always wanted,
oh, yeah, because, that's another good one.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good one.
You know, you're going along trying to pull your boat up, and all of a sudden now you got a hook in your hand because you didn't see somebody left a hook in it. So trying to make sure, what I do is sidearm, and you have to practice sidearming. If sometime, you know, like today, you ain't got much to do. Now, I just looked at the radar, and the main reds and yellows are past us. So we're going to have a little bit of rain on and off, but the rain's going to be backing off. It's going to be hit or miss the rest of the day. If you go in the backyard and practice a sidearm, and the way to do that is to put a 5-gallon bucket or a bucket on its side, not standing up, on its side. And when you go to cast, think of skipping a stone. And the hard part about it is when you bring your rod back, you've got it out to your side, you bring it back, and you go to throw it forward. Watch, I will bet you almost every time you do it on your first two, the tip of the rod goes up at the end of your cast, kind of like a golf swing, where you're at the very end, you're raising it up. Now, when you skip a stone, you're throwing that stone straight at the water, so your hand continues in a downward motion. That's what you've got to learn to do with a fishing pole, because even if you throw a sidearm and the tip of that rod whoops up right at the end of the cast, it's still going up in the air to come down. And what you got to be able to do is shoot it straight. That's why you lay the bucket on its side, you bring your hand back, and you throw at that bucket, trying to go in a straight line from your rod into the bucket. It's very challenging, but once you get it down pat, and you're no longer getting that whoop on the end of your rod where it goes, the bait goes flying up in the air, even though you thought you were throwing it at the water, just start shooting at that bucket. Put a, you know, an 1/8 ounce sinker on, something that won't fly into the neighbor's house, and start doing some sidearm casting at a bucket. That's going to keep it from flying up into the boats. I've watched so many people, either fishing with me or in other boats, and you can see them make this beautiful sidearm cast, and then off it arcs up into the sky to come back down into somebody's rope or rigging on a boat or something, even though it should have never been close to that.
Or the treetops where you catch a squirrel.
Or the treetop, doing a little squirrel fishing, yes,
and
indeed.
And when you practice in the backyard, I guarantee you at some point a neighbor will come over and say, you know, you'll do a little better if you get closer to the water.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you catching? Just look at him and say sand perch, a couple of rock bass, yeah. You know. All right. One of the other things, if I'm tossing up by somebody's boat or a dock, I'm not using a jig head. I'm not using any sinkers. What I will use to cast that far is a weighted styrofoam popping cork. Now, the popping cork won't do any damage. The hook with the shrimp on it's highly unlikely it'll do damage. But having the weight encased in the float allows me to throw it over there, do no damage to the boat. And what I want to do is look at the boat if it's, you know, in the water, and say, all right, I bet she's got about a 2.5-foot draft on that boat. So in other words, from where you see the boat at the waterline to its lowest point's about 2.5 feet, I'm going to put my bait about 3 feet under the bobber, or 3.5 feet. So when I drift that bobber right up next to their boat, that's where those fish are going to be laying, right up underneath that hull. And I can really pull some nice snook out from underneath boats that way and do zero damage. If you're not good at casting like that, cast up into the current, past the boat, and as it starts moving towards the boat, just reel in so that it's going to kiss right at the back of the boat. It can just kind of hug there, or and then just work it out so it'll drift right along the side edge of the boat, doing no damage to the boat, but giving you your best shot at catching fish. And if you're rigged it up so you think you're 6 inches below and you drift it across, doesn't work, lower your hook down another 6 inches. And I'll go till it's so long I can barely cast it. But by keep dropping that shrimp down, if you know, 6 inches a foot every other cast or two, I actually come away from some of these boats you would swear there was no fish on with catching fish. Or I'll take the bobber, sinkers, everything off, just put the hook in the shrimp and cast it up into the current and let it drift down to the bottom. And with no weights, no bobbers on it, I can get it to go right down by the bottom and then kind of drift through any of the little nooks and crannies that would be underneath that boat where they've rev the motor or whatever, and allowing it just to kind of bounce along the bottom, the line actually acts like a parachute. So as it starts getting kind of parallel to me, I'm going to start feeding a little bit of line out so that it pulls some of that, keeps the bait in the strike distance. If you don't give it a little extra line, the line as it's being pulled by the water, which is pulling on your bait, will bring it much closer to you and away from where you're starting to go. So you got to give it a little extra line to get that. Pay attention, because you're not going to feel the fish pull as much as you're going to see the line move first. As soon as you see that line start to move any direction but what the normal drift is, start reeling like crazy before you set the hook. Reel as fast as you can to get that line up, and then when you feel contact with the fish, that's when you set up on them. But if you just try and set the hook when you see the line move, you usually have so much slack, it's a useless effort. You have to reel, then set. So
no, that's really sound advice, because, I mean, you don't realize the amount of bow in the line from the current, because the line is lighter and getting pulled by the water current or even the wind more so, and your bait is farther upstream from where your line is going to. And a good example of that is, you know, watch any fly fishing video in a river when they're casting across it. A lot of times they'll take their line after their fly has hit it, they'll actually take their rod tip and roll it up current to try to get that line above that fly, so you get a much more better sound drift over that spot rather than just letting it go slack and let your line start pulling. And I do the same thing behind my house. I cast at the bridge, and when the tide is going out, I roll my line to the right going up current, so my bait's going to sink down just a little bit faster as that line has got plenty of slack, rather than that line being pulled by the current first and then lifting my bait up higher in the water column.
Or dragging it closer to you.
Mm-hmm. Right, and when you go to set the hook with a big belly in the line like that, you're setting the hook. You're setting the current, you're setting the loop in the line, and you're not doing much to the hook.
No, so you got to tighten up a little bit first. Mm. Rain. Now, most of our freshwater canals have been pretty low.
Yeah. Now, yes, they have.
There is something going on in Florida that I cannot find out about. But they've dropped the water in the Stick Marsh, a couple of the other reservoirs. Okeechobee's way down. What is up with all the water levels on all of our reservoirs being dropped in the winter? Really?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me why they do that.
I don't know if that has anything to do with the algae blooms that were coming out of the rivers or what. If the Corps of Engineers decided, well, let's drop the water levels and... I don't know, but I've heard that from some other people, too. Reservoirs are the lowest they've seen them in a long time.
And this is going into winter. We could easily go into a drought as into a rainy spell.
That's right.
That really makes no sense. Okeechobee's at super low levels, the Stick Marsh. There's a half a dozen other reservoirs and stuff. And there is one thing they seem to have in common. They're all either associated with or feed to the Kissimmee-Okeechobee thing, where they're dropping the water levels just dramatically. And I don't know what's up with all this. But locally, it has nothing to do with any of that. Just Florida, southwest Florida, the sun here and our climate evaporates 51 to 52 inches of water a year. So that's an easy 2 inches a month. And we haven't got a lot of rain. We've gotten bursts of rain, but it's not been enough to fill the ditches up and get the dams flowing and the weirs flowing. Any odds on today?
Today there actually might be a chance, because we've had a very good long soaking rain over the last 24 hours. So the ground is kind of getting a little bit saturated, and I've noticed in certain areas where the swales are actually holding water.
Well, in front of KDW out here, the ditches are full. It's into the parking lot.
I think I saw a tugboat go by just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, well, no need for tow trucks. You're going to have tugboats if this rain keeps up much longer.
That's right. So, yeah, no, I think that there's a lot of regeneration in water levels here in this area, but...
So what's this going to do to the bass fishing? Now, RJ, you're a bass fisherman. Robert, you like bass fishing. RJ, what's up with the bass fishing? Well, better or worse?
I think high water is what the bass like, especially after rains and stuff. All this stuff is getting washed into the lakes and the swales and the canals, and I think this is the time of year that if you want to catch some really big bass, this is the time to do it. Because also with the deeper water, the bigger ones become more
accessible.
They're full
of eggs. It's all pre-spawn.
Right.
So if you want your trophy fish, now is the time,
to go bass fishing. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I agree with both of you on that. I mean, you can't go wrong with those. The rising water tends to get those fish a little bit better, but it also oxygenates it and kind of reinvigorates whole water.
So it definitely makes them more active.
Crankbaits, worms, jigs, frogs, what are we talking about here?
Because they're in pre-spawn mostly, those bigger bass that are filled up with eggs, I'm going to do one of two things. I'm either going to use a shiner under a bobber or possibly free line, because that's just kind of almost guarantees you a bass. But if not, I'm actually going to stick with like a worm or a lizard and walk it real slow on the bottom, because those females are starting to look for locations to build their nest, or the males are building the nest. The females are looking for those prime locations. And as I'm walking that lizard or worm past the spot that that female might be eyeballing, might entice her to bite a little bit more, because I'm staying slower and more in the strike zone.
Right, and I think as the males are building those nests, they get very aggressive.
They get super
aggressive. They don't want anything near their potential eggs. So that's a really good time to pull a strike from a bigger bass, because he's going to be defending that hole he's digging.
Okay, so I'm going to go with the other thought. We've only got a couple minutes left here, right? For me, what I'm looking for out of the rain is, we got to fix that clock, because my clock's all messed up here.
Okay.
The clock there says I got 2 minutes left. What I'm looking for is it to fill up the canals, get enough water flowing so the dams and spillways will start running. Because like up here in Northport, there's one out over by Publix right out front on that access road by the fire department. Mm. As you're going over that little access road bridge, you look to your left, there's a dam that dumps off into the Miaka River there. That's probably one of the best snook dams in the country. There's more snook there than on almost any dam in the county or the state. You go down into Port Charlotte, as you're going along 41, we have the little access roads that the businesses are on. If you're driving along one of them, pull over into one of the parking lots, let the car traffic go by so there's nobody behind you, pull up onto the bridge, stop, and look to the east. You will see the dam there. And that dam is where all the tarpon, the snook, and we're talking tarpon from 18 inches to 4 foot, and snook from 10 inches to 4 foot. These are where these big fish are going to come, because it hasn't rained in a while. The dams haven't been flowing. As soon as that fresh water starts breaching over those dams and coming out of the culvert pipes, these fish load up there, because tons of minnows, bugs, worms, frogs. You don't think of the saltwater fish eating the bugs and the frogs, but they do. And all the lizards and all these other things get washed over these dams with that flowing current. That's when they're going to be there to eat. And you want white soft plastic baits. That's usually the key to doing it. I would say the white DOA cal shad. You could use a red jig head. That would be fine. But I'd almost go with the natural lead color.
Yeah.
With the white
body.
That's
kind of my favorite.
And it can be glow, it can be white, it can be pearl, whitish color. Don't get so crazy that it's, okay, got to be this perfect one. But anything white like that is going to be awesome. And you're pitching it right at the dam. So you don't want expensive stuff. DOA fits in perfectly. It's less than, $360 for a bag of a bunch of baits. And not expensive jig heads, because you got to cast it right at the dam. Chances are there's a lot of rocks there that they put in for backfill to hold the dam up. You're going to get snagged up a lot.
Yes.
But if you can make this happen, you're going to catch a lot of fish. But if you go there and there's no water coming over the dam, there's no fish below it. There might be, but it's not
any
as good.
Not any numbers anyway, so.
So anyway, yeah. This has been a random show. Are we doing another one before the end of the year?
If you'd like.
Okay. Are we doing it next week or the week after? I don't even know what the date is, for God's
sake. Yeah, we'll have to
Merry
talk.
Christmas
I'm old now.
Next week.
My birthday was last weekend. So, Anyway, Fish and Frank here in the chair. Robert in the chair across from me. RJ in the control center. Say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye, guys. Merry goodbye, Christmas. Goodbye, guys.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.